You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you sports hate Draymond Green? Like him last night at the game was over, putting his hands on his knees and going right to the camera.
Classic.
Or is it like there's some heels in the playoffs still.
Big time, yeah.
Brunson. I think he's a heel.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I think Ant's either way. Either love him or you hate him. Because you know there's somebody that's like, oh, I hate that guy.
Get the Edwards.
He's so arrogant. What's he proven? And then there's somebody like, dude, this guy's awesome.
That's funny, yeah.
Right. Rudy Gobert.
Great one. Yeah.
Maybe. Russell Westbrook. I mean, Russell Westbrook took a dunk while the game was over and squashed and literally hung on the rim, yeah, twirling around, getting a technical foul.
He doesn't have many good postseason moments.
Threw it up in the air and said, take your ass home. That's heel
mentality.
It was
heel, like, you're right.
There's more than I thought.
I think Shador Sanders is going to create that, as we were talking about last segment.
I think
the majority of people are rooting against Shador Sanders, and that's unfortunate. But you know what? That's the bed you made, too, though. I mean, like, I understand Deion and all that kind of stuff. Deion, as a dad, did what he was supposed to do and gave that kid an opportunity. I don't know that he necessarily handled the opportunity the best. And so because of that, I think people sports hate Shador Sanders, right? I think that, and that's fair. I'm sure a lot of people sports hate Patrick Mahomes.
They should.
And they should.
Like we sports hated John Elway.
Yeah.
This just might not be sports hate. This just might be hate.
This is game 7. You know how much it means to Harden, how much it means to the Clippers organization trying to go on an extended postseason run. They had one quarter of energy. It happened to be the first quarter. Since that point, the Nuggets have dominated.
Well, they have. And James Harden, obviously, 2-for-8. You'd like to see him. I'd rather be 2-for-18. Yes. You know, just be aggressive, looking to score. But I do wonder if fatigue playing a role.
Fatigue. We're starting to talk about fatigue in a league where guys take off every other game in the regular season. That stuff ain't going to fly.
Man, they
played over 40 minutes in game 6, man. He was tired, didn't have the legs.
Tough. I mean, maybe if you played all games all season long, you'd be ready to go for the postseason. I don't know. Just my take on the whole thing, you know. Jordan never had fatigue.
No, he had a flu and still played well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
true.
You know, he got hit in the face. You just licked the blood off with your tongue. You didn't have a trainer come over and, like, spray you down.
I think part of the problem today, though, is in sports in general, is that these guys are making so much money, it just doesn't matter to them. Like back in those days, you win in the playoffs, you got huge bonuses that mattered. Now you're getting, and I hate to be this guy, say you advance, you get, like, a $200,000 bonus. That's not a lot of money for a lot of these NBA players. Like, the juice isn't worth the squeeze for a lot of these guys, especially when you have guaranteed contracts, and they've all got their money, and baseball players, and, I mean, my God, the incentive for a baseball player once they get paid to go out there and do anything is zero, because they've already gotten paid, you know, with a guaranteed contract. So I don't know what the answer is. The fatigue thing is not it, but I do know that James Harden is one of the least clutch athletes of our generation.
This entire block just made me smile when I saw it for the first time. Like when you put it together.
Oh yeah.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Cause I just hear Bob's voice. Like there are three minute topics in here. This guy sucks is the first line of
he does. Like James Harden is a name. But he's not as good as his name is.
And then the second one is Denver coach. NBA coach, most useless job in sports.
Find me a more useless job in professional sports than an NBA coach. Seriously, text him in. I mean, first base coach ranks up there. That's a pretty useless job. Anybody could coach. It really should be just the last batter who made the last out coach first. You're just holding
the
shin guard.
He's the ghost runner in extra innings.
And you don't even need to yell get back anymore because you only get two throws over. So it's not like you're working out there. Like the first base coach, man, that's an ass scratcher job. You just stand out there and scratch yourself. and then the NBA coach is right there with it as well. Denver is proving. Who's coaching that team right now? Does it matter? They won the first round of the playoffs. Yeah. They're firing a coach who won a championship.
Yeah, I wish I could argue it more. I mean, Edelman's been great, but in those 48 minutes that they're on the court, I mean, legitimately, it is he's the player coach. Jokic is coaching them. He's drawing up the plays. He's telling people where to go. I mean, he is.
I mean, you've got to go out there and want to play.
Like, in between games, I'm sure Edelman's doing great film reviews and adjustments.
Oh, I bet. I mean, it's probably top notch.
and then
the guys are looking at the sky, thinking they'd be anywhere else and listening to this guy.
And then go ahead, Mac.
The Lakers hired a podcaster to be their coach.
You want me to read that last one?
Yeah.
The last topic from Bob's trio of NBA. Pop out. If I were Bill Self, I would take the Spurs job based solely on the way the fan base acted this year. Spoiled brats.
Did you see the way the KU basketball fan
just
base behaved?
I love it. That's
Did you see the way that I'm going to say the vocal minority because it's not fair, but the vocal minority that's present on social media, text line, calling in, all that kind of stuff. Did you see the way that the KU fans, for the first time in 50 effing years, handled a little bit of adversity? A little bit of adversity, and KU fans sucked.
Oh, they were whining.
And, I mean,
what the heck?
The amount of hate that was being thrown out for Bill Self this past year from alleged KU fans.
He's lost it.
Disgusting.
We're having ribeye tonight, not fillets.
Exactly. Now you sound like my daughter. I don't want ribeye. There's too much fat in that. I want the meat with no fat. I don't like eat the damn ribeye. It's
normally
the best.
Normally we have the twice-baked potatoes. I guess the baked potato will work.
Yeah, you're not going to bake it another time. No, I'm busy.
Spalding move.
Right. 100%. Like, I was appalled by the behavior of KU fans towards Bill Self this year. Like, it really was disgusting the way that fans acted. If anybody deserves a free pass in this town, it's Bill Self, right? Had a down year where they still made the tournament, right? That's a down year. Pop resigned on Friday. One of the greatest NBA, and he is a great NBA coach. That's why he stands out. I mean, just phenomenal coach, right? And back-to-back rookies of the year, and now the potential to get Giannis down there. I'm like, man, Pop's coming back. Let's go. And then he announces his resignation, and he's out. And so they got some clown in there. I don't know who it is, Jim Johnson or somebody you never heard of before. But maybe after next season, Bill Self looks around and goes, you know what? I'm not appreciated here anymore. And that's the worst thing for a coach or a player or anybody to feel like they're not appreciated. And I'm watching this from afar last year, seeing what people are saying and ripping on Bill Self and criticizing Bill Self. I'm like, that guy's done nothing but be the best head coach in the history of this university. And there were people still upset with the way that things went last year. That's just a spoiled little brat kind of fan. And if I'm Bill Self, I'm like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I'm at the end of my, I don't want to deal with recruiting. I don't want to deal with NIL. Any of that kind of stuff. And I sure as hell don't want to deal with a certain portion of a fan base that's pissed that we weren't a one seed this year and is acting like it's the end of the world.
We're having Clico tonight. Normally it's Ace of Spades.
Like, sorry, the Kim Crawford that you like is out and your Yeti glass.
Franzia today out of the bag.
Like, I'd be honest
normally
with you, man.
It's court.
Go. I'd tell Bill to go.
I mean, you would get Wemby.
You get back-to-back rookies of the year and maybe adding Giannis into the mix.
Oh, God. If I'm the Lakers, you better have somebody at that doorstep right now. Be like, Giannis, sit down. We'll get LeBron out.
Yeah.
But you come in, and it's you and Luka. Okay,
oh, awesome. Now you're talking
That'd
about
be awesome.
Fun, right?
Be great.
I mean, that has to be a selling ploy.
It's a good basketball fit, too.
Yeah.
It's got to be a selling ploy. Hey, you come be the star. Well, I don't know, man. LeBron's there. It's always LeBron. What if he's not there?
But you got Bronny James, and there's another young James coming.
Bryce is coming.
Yeah, does Bronny, is there a clause when LeBron is done, so is Bronny?
Probably.
What's worse, the Shador Sanders or the Bronny James?
Well, Bronny made more threes in his rookie debut than Michael Jordan.
Okay. Because I think a lot of
stats.
A lot of it is the same.
About Michael Jordan.
Right? Who's what's the worst situation? I think the Shador Sanders is. But again, LeBron got his guy drafted, his kid drafted. But again, you're a dad and you're doing what you're supposed to do for your kid, right?
You think LeBron's situation's worse? Or Shador's, like, who's the dad?
The kid.
The kid who's in a worse situation.
Bronny,
I think.
Yeah, Shador's already made a ton of money. I mean, like, obviously Bronny doesn't have to do anything. He made a good NIL. But, like, dude, like, Stephen A. Smith's getting in arguments and all this stuff going on podcasts. Like, nobody's going on podcasts being like, Deion, I'm sorry for talking about your kid. Deion's like, talk about him. I don't care. No pub is bad point. Pub.
Yeah, like, Deion's like, I'm fine with it, kind of. Like, he's kind of giving his blessing, you know.
And you can make an argument Shador Sanders is a good football player. It's a lot harder to make that argument for Bronny in basketball.
No, that's a really good point, Mac. I think you're right about that. So but time will tell in the NFL.
Exactly, 100%.
Too, yeah, I think it's Bronny's. Because, like, Bronny's also not vocal. Like, Shador's like, I don't care what they say. Haters hate. Legendary. F it. You know, whatever.
Haterade.
Whereas, like, Bronny Jr.'s just like, I just want to win, Jen. Like, I don't you know, it's like there's nothing.
I just want to win, Jen.
Yeah, I just like, I'm not coming out and say anything. So I think Shador also kind of owns it. So it's like you can't really, I don't know, I think the worst situation is LeBron, because we saw what happened. He got drafted, they went in the same time, and then G League. And then he can't shoot, he can't, whatever.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's tough. Must be nice to be in that situation either way.
Oh, yeah, right.
No doubt about it. Coming up, Vern. Our guy, Josh Verner, he'll join us on the other side here on Fesco and Dusty. And I want to ask him how long it took for his hand to heal after he shook Jack Caglione. It's 96.5 The Fan, your home for Royals baseball.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at TheFan965 for behind-the-scenes content from the show. Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan. Welcome back to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Long time listener and supporter of you, because you tell it like it is.
Here's our Royals insider, Josh Vernier.
That's right, Monday, 8:20, Vern joins the show that we call Fesco and Dusty, and then it is your home for Kansas City sports, Vern. Back home tonight, the people are probably going to be more excited than they were when they left the last time, because these boys are rolling. They're 11-2 in their last 13. They're starting to hit the ball a little bit better, 4.3 runs in that 13-game span. And boy, has Michael Garcia been great. But I have to ask you, Vern, how long did it take you to realize that your hand is going to be okay after shaking Jack Caglione's?
Well, he didn't hurt me.
Oh, he destroyed my hand.
Yeah, no.
I'm just
soft. No, he's a monster. He's a huge dude, but no, there was no pain inflicted. Was he trying to stunt on you guys? Was he letting you know that he was there?
No, he just showed up at the typical pregame, you know, the shorts, the socks rolled down.
No, I mean,
when
you brought up the handshake, I mean, did was he trying to?
Oh, no.
I think it's y'all with the handshake?
No, I think it's just his normal grip.
Oh, okay.
Like, I think it's just that's just a man child. Good hell. And then, of course, put one on top of the building in front of us and gave us the salute. So, my curse.
So you guys are friends now? This is just a long way to say that you're friends with Jack Caglione?
Yeah, we're pretty much boys, man. Like, you know, we're
nice.
We're pretty much boys, man. Like, I don't know. Maybe he'll invite me to his wedding. He is engaged.
Well, it'll certainly pay off, because the crowds of people that used to swarm Eric Hosmer. Jack Caglione could have this entire city eating out of his hand. He has all the talent in the world and personality for days.
Well, and that's the key right there, the personality for days. I mean, Bobby is going to be the greatest player in this generation, obviously, but that doesn't mean Jack Caglione can't be the most loved, if you will, because Dusty did bring it up kind of with that Haas type of mentality. And look, Haas was the leader of this whole operation for, you know, 6 years that he was here. That was the guy. Jack Caglione can be that guy, can he, and still have Bobby be the best player on the team?
Certainly. Now, I haven't been around Cags enough to know his personality as far as leadership is concerned, right? Being around him in spring training, he was, he's always seen, but he was seen, not heard. He's a rookie in a big league camp, so he kind of got in where he fit in. But, you know, once he gets his feet wet at the big league level, has a little bit of success, then we'll have the opportunity to see what type of true leader he was. Eric Hosmer, one of the best that we've been around. And, you know, Vinny, Salvi right now are doing a tremendous job inside of that clubhouse. During that elongated offensive funk, you didn't see Vinny or Michael Massey or Jonathan India hanging their heads, pointing fingers, feeling bad for themselves. They were celebrating the wins, giving credit to the pitching staff, and confident that their group would turn it around. That, as Dusty mentioned with the numbers, the offense certainly looking like it's turning it around.
You know, also, too, with this team and the way that they're, you know, starting to win some games and get above 500, you know, it starts to, all right, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Who are we going to go after? And now you start to look at, you know, kind of an outfield bat. Mikel Garcia, I said last week, second best player on this team. Obviously, Drew Waters is playing really good right now. You got Isbell playing good, but you still need a bat on this team. Have you heard anything yet, some names that we can maybe start looking at to acquire that could help this team later in the season?
No, I mean, nothing other than the usual names that are expiring contracts or names that the Royals have showed interest in the past. Again, just flipping the calendar to May, we're still, what, 3 months away from the trade deadline, still a month and a half away from even the uber-aggressive J.J. Piccolo, I think, from, you know, pulling the trigger, as we've seen already in the first 35 games. You know, Drew Waters within your own organization comes up and really sense getting that boost of confidence, finding out that I'm staying in the big leagues, that MJ Melendez is the guy being sent down. Waters is hitting .333 with an OPS north of 900. So I think you continue to see what you have in house. I had a caller last night dial me up and for a nice win. When are they getting rid of Hunter Dozier? I know, or not Hunter Dozier, Hunter Renfroe. He asks, well, I know he's hitting
fair
a little
mistake.
Bit better of late, but when are we getting rid of Hunter Renfroe? And you know, my response was, well, he can't be hitting. You know, you can't overlook him doing the things that you want him to do. So, you know, not to mention the money that he's still making. So, I think we got to get at least a little bit deeper into May before we start talking about replacing players. Now, as far as a specific name, you know, I heard you mention Taylor Ward, Luis Roberts on an expiring contract in Chicago, and we all know how well those two front offices work together. And we also know that the Royals, in my opinion, as it stands right now, we're going to hold all the cards going into that deadline on July 31st because they have, as of right now, knock on wood, quite a bit of big league pitching depth. You know, we saw Noah Cameron come up here and throw take a no-hitter into the seventh inning. Michael Lorenzen, despite the four home runs that he gave up yesterday, is still putting up numbers comparable with any number five starter in Major League Baseball. Kyle Wright looked good in his rehab assignment on Friday, getting up to 60 pitches. You know, his contribution at the big league level might not be all that far away, not to mention all of the minor league pitching talent that you have. So when you have pitching and the deadline's approaching, you call the shots. And with a front office that's already aggressive, an owner that I think is already done with what a wild card team looks like, I think he wants a division title now. I have no reason to believe that they won't. Just like they did last year to acquire Lucas Hursek, part with the pitching prospect to possibly bring in that middle of the lineup bat, along with a Jack Caglione. You know, if you could throw a Cags and a trade acquisition into this lineup in the second half of the season with Mikel Garcia, with Drew Waters, and the big four at the top, man, now we're talking about a division title type of offense.
Vern, 19-16, the record the Boys in Blue have currently. I said today, I don't think they'll be under 500 for the rest of the year. Partially because their next four series, they play right. Four teams that have one team, a 500 or better record, and that team is the Houston Astros, one game above it. Obviously, Boston at 500. We don't need to talk about the White Sox, but three games above 500, I don't think four out of four is a stretch against the White Sox, and then, you know, move on and take care of business elsewhere. But I think there's some truth to that. They may not fall under 500 the rest of the year.
Yeah, I hope you're right. And yeah, it's sound logic. Cole Reagans returns to the Hill, followed by Lugo, Waka, and Bubich going up against that Chicago White Sox team. You certainly want three of four if you're calling for the sweep. I'm all about it. But yeah, you look at the next 13 games, 4 with Chicago, 3 against the Red Sox, a trio in Houston, and then 3 against the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, you look at this homestand and you want a, obviously a winning homestand, a 5-win homestand. And then I look at the Houston, the St. Louis series, give me another 3 wins there. So an 8-5 stretch going into that big series in San Francisco against a very well-rounded Giants team. Yeah, that would put them 3-6 games above 500. And with this pitching staff, yeah, certainly no reason to think that they'll dip below 500 again. But, you know, you're always one injury away, one, elongated pitching funk away. For as good as the offense has been, keep it up, right? Keep it up on this homestand. Continue to instill confidence in guys that have been laying their head on the pillow over the first month of the season, beating themselves up because of their lack of contribution. I can't imagine how much fun that plane ride back from Baltimore was when a guy like Vinny, India, Massey, 3 of the most disappointing bats in the first month of the season, they all go bridge in that game. I can't imagine there was anybody on that plane yesterday not necessarily deep down feeling the celebration. Everyone contributed to, if not yesterday's 11-6 victory, everyone has contributed to this stretch in which they've won 11 of 13. So you know the confidence is sky high. They know who's in the other dugout, but you know, this team to me has a clear-eyed focus now. You know, I think the fan base should reflect that. Chest out, eyes forward.
Yep.
With the eyes focused on the Detroit Tigers and climbing to the top of this division.
Vern, is this considered a minor league rehab start tonight for Cole Reagan since he's going against the White Sox?
It might be, but it does count towards his big league service time. So okay. No, we're not going to call it a rehab assignment.
Is it fair for me last week saying Garcia is the second best player on this team right now?
Yeah, that's certainly fair. Listen, I remember I had a scout tell me that Drew Waters was going to be a $100 million player because he can do everything on the field, right? He's a 5-tool player, and we're seeing that since he got back to the big leagues. But Michael Garcia, I was diving into the numbers yesterday. Okay, so his batting average, .319, is top 15 in Major League Baseball. So he hits for average. Power-wise, on average, he hits the ball harder per swing than anybody in baseball. Mm. So he hits for average. He hits for power. We all know about that cannon right arm when he's over there at third base. Defensively, StatCast says he's one of the 25 best defensive infielders in the game. Not third baseman, but shortstop, second base. So he.
And I was going to go one step further, Vern, and even say that I think next to Bobby, he's your best infielder on this team. And now you've got the numbers to match it up, too.
And throw in base running. I know he got off to a rough start this season, but last year he was statistically, according to FanGraphs, one of the 5 best base runners in the game. So he can run, he can throw, he can field, he can hit for average, and he can hit for power. That's the next guy you pay. That's a $100 million athlete right there. If you can play shortstop and do everything else, yeah, you are a terrifically well-rounded 5-tool player, and it just so happens he's lining up next to the best 5-tool player on the planet. No, you're 100% right, and boy, is it fun to watch this dude. Just swagger, confidence, craves the big moments, and the way this team's playing, there'll be plenty of big moments coming up.
You mentioned Drew Waters, too, being a $100 million player. It's nice to know how a guy can perform when he's not worried about being sent back down to the minor leagues, you know? And I don't think Drew Waters has to worry about that, but we're finally seeing him. It's funny with guys like him and Garcia, Vern, you know, like there are guys, they've been here for a while. It doesn't feel like it's that exciting, but we should be excited about this. These are two minor league guys that you've kind of had in your system for a while now that have come up and are producing at the big league level and taking the pressure off some of these guys that haven't been producing. Drew Waters has been a great call up for this team.
That 2-run, 2-out RBI knock on a changeup low and away yesterday to put the Royals ahead was he's swinging through that every single at bat of his career prior to this season, and it's a great point as far as when you have that belief breathed into you by your organization, right? The first time really since they acquired Drew Waters. When they sent MJ Melendez down, that was really the first time this organization has told him with their actions, we believe in you. It's a lot like Ryan O'Hearn, who we just saw in Baltimore. You know, Mike Matheny said all of the right things about how we believe in Ryan O'Hearn, and then he never put him in the lineup. Used him as a pinch hitter, as a platoon bat, never really had that belief breathed into him by the organization. Baltimore's done that, and now, you know, Ryan O'Hearn's taken off, and I think everybody in Kansas City, it's always funny with Bro Hearn. Yep. Even when he beats him on Friday, everyone's like, well... And, Dusty, I think you even tweeted it, and it had to be O'Hearn. If you're going to lose to someone, let it be Bro Hearn, because I think he's, like Drew Waters, a reflection of just how far confidence and belief from your boss, just how far that can carry you.
Vern, I want to have this conversation real quickly because I don't think I'm being egregious here when it comes to Caglione. Like, I think it's time for Omaha. Am I wrong?
No. Okay. It's hard to argue, and I think the actions of the organization say the same thing, right? He plays right field in back-to-back days this weekend, and it really looks like he's just setting up, standing up at the box, ready to do damage, and, you know, just watching the at-bats this weekend, it did seem as if he was overmatching these pitchers. So, yeah, you want to bump him up to Omaha, you're not going to hear any complaints.
Does he get up to the big league level, though, this year, or are we still slow playing that one?
Well, if he dominates AAA, yeah. I mean, if he could put up 1,000 OPS and make their pitching look silly, and there's a spot for him at the big league level, most certainly. Yeah. I think him and a trade acquisition could lengthen this lineup to a place where it can stack up with the best of the best in the American League. And that's, of course, so long as everyone can stay healthy, especially those top four. Salvi, less than a week away from his 35th birthday, that hip starting to bark. And I can't imagine that stuff is going to happen less as the months go by. So, honestly, as the season goes by, I'd like to see someone push Salvi for that number four spot in the lineup. If you could drop him, have less pressure on the captain to carry the team at 35 while he's also catching, that would be ideal. So maybe that's your trade acquisition, is a guy to maybe drop Salvi to that five spot, and then Cags can come in and start maybe hitting in the six or seven spot.
Vern, what level of, like, stupid as in an awesome thing is currently happening with Aaron Judge and that batting average?
Yeah, well, it was 432 yesterday. I knew it was up there.
He has
there.
Almost a 100-point lead over the guy who's number two.
Is it still? Yeah.
He's like at 423 and Goldschmidt's at like 347. I've never seen a discrepancy like that.
No. I mean, well, I guess I don't know what the on-base percentage was for Bonds back in 01. I'm sure there was a wild discrepancy there, but he was also cheating. And for every reason why we love Bobby, Aaron Judge is cut from that same cloth as far as just being a good dude, a great ambassador for the game, and one of the greatest hitters we've ever seen. Certainly the best hitter of our generation, and maybe the best since Albert Pujols. It's wild that the batting average is that high, and I don't think the average sports fan is really aware of it. Honestly, I think outside of New York, sports fans are tired of Aaron Judge. To be quite honest, maybe I'm alone in that, but I just haven't heard enough talk about, like you said, a crazy statistic that when I was a kid would have been front page news more days than not.
I think the problem with Aaron Judge is pretty simple. He doesn't win when it matters most, and people are tired of the regular season stuff, you know?
And that's fair. He did blow it last October.
I mean, the fifth inning alone. My dad gets, you know, sends my sister and I stuff all the time. Look what Judge is doing. My sister always responds back on the family thread, and she goes, do it in October. Don't care till October. And there's something to be said for that, man. That's when legends are made in baseball. Like, I was reading something about the Chiefs today, and they were talking about their offensive tackle, Simmons. They're like, he may not come back till January, but that's when the Chiefs season begins anyway. So, like,
100%,
you've got to do it in the postseason to be considered one of these great players. Yeah.
No
in that uniform, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. With when the Royals were in New York, I'm going to a commercial break, and I posed the question, does anyone hate Aaron Judge? And during the commercial break, someone on the text line says, the only people that hate Aaron Judge are Yankees fans in October. I think that's correct.
That's a great line, Vern. That is fantastic.
Vern.
Well, that was my line. It wasn't a texter. You know what? I'll take it.
Right. Yeah, you take credit for that. That's really good.
What's what we got given away tonight on the pitch clock?
Yeah. Brady Singer, Ellie De La Cruz, and the Cincinnati Reds coming to town later this month. I have tickets to the Tuesday game, the Wednesday game. I'll let the contestant pick which game they go to if they win. So be listening tonight for the On Deck Show beginning at 5:30.
Also, Alex is still salty. They pulled Bubic after 76 pitches because he needed one more strikeout.
He should be.
Yeah.
He needed one more punch out, and he would have hit a big old parlay.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Vern. Well, we'll have you on tonight. Hopefully, these guys can sweep these White Sox and just continue to stay above 500.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
You bet. Josh Vernier there, our Royals insider here on 96.5 The Fan. They play the White Sox tonight. Bob, I'm with you, man. I think a sweep is what you're going for.
Yeah, you have to go for a sweep of this series, right? You don't get many opportunities to face teams that aren't very good. Go back last week. It was Colorado, right? Everybody came in here thinking, okay, if you take two out of three. No, it wasn't good enough to take two out of three from Colorado. Mm-hmm. Just like it's not good enough to take just three out of four from the White Sox. This is a team right now that just isn't a very good team. I think they have 10 wins on the year right now.
10-24.
Right? 10-24. They're not playing great baseball. These are the opportunities to separate yourself, because you know Cleveland and you know Detroit aren't wasting these opportunities, and Cleveland and Detroit are ahead of you in the standings right now. Not that that matters. It's May. Nothing of that mindset matters at this point in time, but what matters are those games in front of you. And when you have an opportunity to play against the White Sox, you got to take advantage of that opportunity, because eventually it's going to turn around. You're going to have three against the Yankees, or you're going to have three against the Red Sox, or three against some good team that'll be coming up, and you'll look back and go, damn, I wish we would have just swept the White Sox. And so go out there and sweep the White Sox. That's the goal. That's not an overachieving goal. That's not me thinking, oh my God, this is craziness. They're the White Sox. They're not good. You're the Royals. You're a good baseball team. Go out there and take advantage and feast on this.
Royals minus 250 tonight on the money line. And the over under 7.5. So 3-1 Royals win is what Vegas thinks this game will be.
All they need is four.
That's right. 3-1 is a number. 867-5309. That was Jenny's number.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to get their own number. At least that's the way they do it in New York. You listen to 96.5 The Fan, you're home for Kansas City Sports.
Hey, it's Michael Wacha, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan.
Mom was Jesse's girl, and her number was 867-5309, according to the text line. Somebody in the text line says, Dusty, dude, I know you got a lot of stuff going on, but is there a chance you can share that drink recipe you did on Smash or Pass? Are they referencing the transfusion? For like when we did the Masters Master Pass?
That would be,
I think that'd be that's it. That's the only drink I've
that's
done,
the only drink
right?
Yeah,
that's
done.
The only one we've done on
yeah,
here,
yeah, unless
right?
we talked about a different one, but I think that'd be it.
Mm.
That was good.
The transfusion?
Yes.
Yeah. Vodka, grape juice, lime juice, ginger, ale. I'll send you the recipe. If that's the one, 816, let me know, and I'll give you the recipe. It's not tough. So your Giants, I say that facetiously, Abdul Carter, first off, before we bring it up, are we all on the side of get your own number?
That's Bob, where I am. Yeah.
Mac?
Yeah, I'm okay with that side.
Yes.
Gordon,
they gave number 4, right? No,
like seven.
Seven.
Yeah.
And called you the next George Brett. And then it was
downhill
good.
From there.
Then 4. Left field, Gold Glove, World Series winner, future, right?
Right.
No pressure. Abdul Carter won at 11 or 56.
Right.
Lawrence Taylor, get off my lawn. No chance.
Lawrence Taylor goes, I appreciate it, but go make your own number famous, right? Then he wants Phil Simms number 11, right? Because he wore 11 in college. And Phil's like, yeah, I don't care. But the family's like, no, don't give it up.
Yeah, like, the agent and family, like, eh.
I know it's 2025 and we don't appreciate things that happened yesterday. I am a history lover and a history buff, and I appreciate the past and respect what became of the past. I know I'm a grandpa and people don't care, and we want to erase history and take down everything that happened before us. That ain't the case, pal. There are two numbers in the Giants' history that are retired that you want. And I understand you wanting a certain number. You're also a rookie in the NFL who's never done anything. Phil Simms is a pretty damn accomplished quarterback, and Lawrence Taylor is arguably the greatest football player of all time. And so in order to be in that category to use those numbers, you've got to go out there and produce. It's like, we want to put the cart in front of the horse. Give Abdul Carter whatever number it is and let him go out there and make that number famous. And I think, isn't that better? Blazing your own trail and being the guy? Because if you wore 56 or 11, or if you tried to wear 15 here or 16 here or anything like that in Kansas City, you'd have a lot of people looking at you with a side head going, no, we're not wearing that number. Like, nobody's wearing number 5 anymore. 20, they can wear all they want with the Royals. But number 5 is not going to be a number that gets worn again, right? Salvi's number 13, probably not a number that's going to be worn again. You shouldn't wear these numbers again. When you are a great player, however you want to define great for your university or your professional team, however you define that, and that number gets taken out of service and is retired because somebody was so good it was worthy of taking their number out of rotation, you can't bring that back into rotation. You can't bring that number back and just give it to somebody and say, all right, here you go, here's my number. No, man, you got an opportunity. Go out there and create your own legacy. Blaze your own trail. Do something for you and take number 57 or 59 or whatever it is and go make that your number. Because no matter how good you are, if you wore 56 or 11, LT and Simms are always going to be talked about over you, just like if you try to do it with Mahomes and 15. And this, like, it's going around now a lot. We're talking about Brunson being the greatest Nick of all time. Abdul Carter wants different numbers. He's not the only one. Other guys that are coming into this league now and other teams I've seen, and I can't remember who, have wanted some numbers that are retired for other teams. Go out there and create your own number, man. Be your own man.
Yeah, you got to blaze your own garage, your jersey, your trail.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to your career, you can blaze your own garage too. And come back in and you'll come up with some good topics for a show.
You know, you think like somebody's going into Chicago going, you know what, I want to wear number 23. No,
I don't think there's anybody in their right mindset that would do that.
No, you would hope not. Or
but I also wouldn't say that Lawrence Taylor is the legacy that Michael Jordan is. Like, Michael Jordan, they wear his number in other sports.
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah.
The Miami Heat retired his number. Yeah, he never played there. Yeah,
not, just like no one would go to a stadium and be like, you know what, I really want 42.
Right. Not going to happen. Yeah, right.
Like, not happening.
Yeah.
But like,
like Aaron Judge going, you know what? I'm going to wear 3 going forward.
I would. Yeah. Yes, yeah, like, please. Maybe you'll win something.
I'll wear 3 going forward from now on. No, or somebody for like the Rangers or the Los Angeles Kings or wanting number 99. Like, no, you're not getting that number. Or whatever Robert Parrish, was he 34 or something like that up there in Boston, whatever. Or whatever number Larry Bird was back in the day. You're not getting those numbers, man. Go do your own thing.
I also think that, like, certain athletes shouldn't have their numbers retired. Like, I think there's, like, it's, like, really, like, yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess Warren Moon gave his to Cam Ward, right?
Which is a different conversation because that's really not his franchise.
And not only that, but, like, gosh, I don't know if this is a tough take, but, like, Warren Moon was nowhere near what Lawrence Taylor was. Like,
right.
I don't think Lawrence, that's tough. Warren Moon was more like the original, like, African-American quarterback.
But Warren Moon didn't have an opportunity for the first 10 years of his career because he was an African-American quarterback. Yeah.
But
right?
He was also, you know, good, didn't really win anything.
Right.
But, like, they retired his number because of, well, I don't know. They decided to retire his number.
He's one of the greats for that franchise.
Right.
You
whereas,
know?
Like, Lawrence Taylor broke a man's leg on live television. Yeah. I mean, that's just, like, the force he had while also blown out of his mind on Kaino. And then was still, like, a dominant force of a player. Like,
not the dominant force.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's Taylor, And there is a little bit of a gap, and then it's Derek Thomas. And I know that probably hurts a lot of Chiefs fans, but that's reality. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just how great Lawrence Taylor – like, my dad still tells me stories that, like, even he was afraid of Lawrence Taylor, and he was watching on television.
Yeah.
I'm just like
– like, Lawrence Taylor was one of those guys that could just, all right, we got to play today, fine. Like, he wouldn't go to training camp. He'd just show up on the – like, they didn't even know if he was going to be there at the game, and he'd show up and have four sacks. It's, I mean
– it's like when I was a kid, like, I wore – you know, 16 for Joe Randa in baseball, or I wore 24 because of King Griffey Jr. But I feel like if I got older, like I would want to figure out my own number. Like in high school, I really liked in basketball, I liked the number 31.
That's a cool number though. That's Reese Tolmes. I like that number.
I shot threes. I enjoyed Reggie Miller. It wasn't really like a sought after number. I was like, 31's cool because you know the reason why basketball jerseys are. You can be able to give the number on one hand. That's why there's no like 36. It's like, no, it's all 31.
It's for the referees. Yeah.
So I was like, ooh, 31's cool. I was like, I liked Reggie. I shoot threes. I think I can, but I try. I'll be 31.
You're every kid that we all grew up shooting threes.
Right. And so I was just like, I'll be 31 because it's a cool number. Nobody else really thinks about number 31. Everybody wanted 34. Everybody wanted 23. Everybody wanted, you know, whatever. And I was like, 31 seems like I would never like if I got drafted by an NFL team or a pro baseball team, like I would never be like, you know what? I wonder if Whitey's family would let me have 10.
I
don't know.
Like you call like the family up and like, say, you know,
we still blame Cairo Santos for not letting Patrick Mahomes wear 5.
Yeah.
Like that's like he didn't crazy. Even like he didn't even go to Cairo Santos and say, hey, man, can I have like 5 instead of having to wear 15? He's like. No,
but the 15 one is it's cool.
Now it's
awesome
because of what he did.
I think it looks better than 5. To be honest with you,
I do too.
Yeah. I think 5's a lot cleaner.
Do you see? I think
we're
15,
in the minority. Bob.
Yeah. We are in the minority. Really? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Single digit numbers, people just love.
They love because they're unique and new now. Yeah. You know, like that kind of thing. That's cool. I get it. Like all the single digit numbers were probably like grandfathered out for a lot of teams back in the day, and now they're coming
Carter
back
should
in.
Go single digit.
He should. He
Malik
absolutely
Neighbors is
should.
Number one. He should go like 0 or 2. And
well, was one is taken as you mentioned, but why not go like? I don't know if this number is even taken or available. 7. It's a great Seven's name fun. For a kid. It's a great number as well. 7.
Great name for a kid.
I mean, 7. Seriously, that's Mickey Mantle in New York.
You got Evan.
You got a little kind of, you know, no, it's 7 if the old G gets that.
I did work with a guy named Zevin.
Oh, good.
Good kid.
So go with a different number. Go with something different that nobody has. Because I think a rush end in a single digit number looks cool. Like that does look kind of cool. But I think the quarterback with the double digit 15 looks really cool too.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he could have been number 13, and it wouldn't have mattered. Like,
yeah,
that's how good he got. Like it doesn't matter what his name. It would just been yes.
But also, it shows you who he is as a person. The fact that he came in as a rookie and didn't even ask the kicker for the number or make a big deal out of it. He just took what was available. I mean, came in with no ego. Shador should try that, right?
Mm. Well, his number's already retired.
It is in college. It won't be in the pros unless he, you know, plays well.
Mm-hmm.
And for Cleveland, that's going like 9-8 as the starting quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, so they
may retire his number in Cleveland just for being a hair above 500.
Yeah. So, should be an interesting football season. By the way, did you guys know that Royals guy's not wearing number 85?
I know. Oh, I saw that. That sucks. That was that's a big miss. I mean, it really is. A big miss from a marketing opportunity. A big miss for him. Yeah. Because you do get paid on the jerseys you sell. Mm-hmm. And if you're Royals 85, man, people are buying that jersey. They don't know it's you at this point in time. They just think it's a cool jersey.
Coming up on the other side, we get into a Falcons New England moment on the ice last night. Plus, Mac Morey might be the most arrogant person in the entire Kansas City metro when it comes to these Boston Celtics. Or should I say the C's. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Fesco and Dusty. Subscribe and watch the show on YouTube by going to our channel at The Fan 96.5, Kansas City's FM sports station. 96.5 The Fan.